for Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Man in Line today concentrates on health and social care. The ministers here, Claire Christian, MHK for South Douglas, and Chief Officer Tim O'Neill. So if you have a question about primary care, urgent emergency care, specialised care, women's and children's care, Nobles Hospital, Ramsey Cottage Hospital, Meds, your GP practice, adult social care, well, they're here between now and one. Call, text, email and WhatsApp with DHSC. Pastor Meyer, good afternoon. Claire Christian. Hi, Claire. Hi, Tim O'Neill.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
All right, good to see you. I can't remember last time. When were you here last time? It was the back end of last year, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think about sort of 6 months.
Yeah, about October time.
Okay. Right, well, let's get to the phone straight away. It's from the answer phone. Here's a message. I think this is it Andrea?
Hi, it's Andrea, and I've got three questions for Claire Christian on the Man in Line on Monday. First one is, when is the NHS levy being brought in? What area of healthcare does she think have improved since the inception of Manx Care? And thirdly, what is DHSC doing in conjunction with Manx Care to improve GP services so that patients can get a doctor's appointment easily? Thank you.
Okay, there's Andrea with three questions.
Claire. Absolutely, three excellent questions. I'm really glad that Andrea's raised the NHS levy. As Andrea will know, that's absolutely something that's very close to my heart. The NHS levy is currently with the Treasury Department, and I was advised last week that unfortunately this won't be brought in before this before the end of this administration, but is looking to be brought in at the beginning of next. I obviously would like that to be sped up as much as I can, but having conversations with the Treasury Minister. But I think just with the timing and what we've got to do left before the end of this administration, it's a shame that it's not able to come in.
How much is it going to raise?
Well, it's interesting because obviously we'll be looking at not just only, obviously, when it does come into action, it won't just be looking at going forward, but also it will be looking at some people's I'm just thinking about it was the NHS levy, not the NHS surcharges.
Levy, yeah.
Is it? So yeah, so the levy won't be brought in. Sorry, in terms of the 1%, 2%, because I remember that the Treasury Minister, Dr. Alan Allison, decided that again that wasn't going to be something that was brought through. However, what I would say in terms of the NHS levy, I was talking about the NHS surcharge before, but the NHS levy. Is something that again it will be looked at in the next administration.
Okay, the next question. The next question was
healthcare improved, and I think again a really really good question. I definitely think in terms of the DHS in terms of engagement strategy that was updated in 2025, where we're taking specific steps to engage with children and young people and vulnerable and marginalised groups, and we continue to look at public experience of services, and obviously we're since I've become minister and at the moment I'm looking at we are looking at with Manx Care doing some rapid reviews in terms of the waiting list, which we absolutely want to make sure that we get down towards the end of this year, which is driven in the mandate. DHSC continues to look at the public experience. We've published reports on the public experience of the maternity service and the primary care waiting times. There's quite a lot. Obviously, if you go back to the beginning of the Manx Care in terms of the inception, I think probably MCALS is one of the really great services that have come out from this administration. But I would say, Andy, there's an absolute lot more that we need to do.
Do you give them specific targets? specific things to
yes,
do.
Yes, absolutely. We do give them targets. It's in the mandate, and we have monthly it's called IPR meetings, and obviously the quarterly performance meeting as well.
Okay. Are there sanctions for failure? If MakeScare don't hit a target that you've prescribed, what happens then?
So take, for example, the ED waiting times. We had our quarterly performance meeting a couple of weeks ago, and we reviewed in terms of the access time from when a patient arrives and is identified as needing a bed, and the 12-hour wait, which is the IPR standard time, was 22%, Andy, and that's absolutely not acceptable. So what we did, we spoke to Manx Care regarding this, and obviously we've introduced the rapid review that we're looking at, and obviously that's also off the back of the MSC and the meeting that I had with them, and also my time that I spent in A&E it's towards the end of last month, March. That was really, really good experience to actually see the front line and actually see what was happening for our patients and for our staff as well.
What do you make of people's impression currently of the emergency department?
So I think what I hear, Andy, and I can only speak from that perspective, what I hear is when people are there, they're obviously getting really good care and it's safe, and it's they're really thankful and grateful to the frontline staff. But the waiting times itself is what I think is driving the frustration. So Manx Care are looking at putting in the clinical decision unit, which we're hoping to have that open by the end of May, which will really, really hopefully speed up those waiting times. They're also looking at further, I think it's 14 or 16 beds in the acute services as well. So that's also something that will hopefully reduce those waiting times, which is really important. But what I would say, Andy, is this isn't something that that we were looking to plan for, that these waiting times were going to be like this. It's obviously had an impact with Ramsey District Cottage Hospital and those services having to be moved down to Nobles, and then obviously winter pressures as well, but as I said, we are absolutely taking action to help ease that situation.
Okay, and the situation with GP appointments?
Yeah, GP appointments. We've got two really good trials happening at the moment. One is at Palatine, and the triage system, and I believe we're getting really good feedback from that. It's getting rid of that, and I would say, I went to shelter accommodation here in my constituency a couple of months ago, and they didn't know you didn't have to do that sort of 8 a.m. scramble. You couldn't ring up for at any time. So you can for Palatine now. You don't have to ring up at that 8 a.m. You can ring at any time. And what they will do is they will get back in contact with you, and they will arrange that appointment.
Okay. Is there any connection between the fact that some people may have trouble getting a GP appointment and some people turning up at the emergency department with conditions that could possibly be looked at by a GP?
I think it's, I don't want to sit here as a non-clinical person, to sort of make those decisions, Andy. I would absolutely say that would be for a clinical person to say whether they should be attending the A&E. But what I would say is Manx Care does put out some really good advice about what the timings for the med service, for the out of hours service, and obviously if you're unable to get your GP appointment, I can see how that is extremely frustrating, and we are looking at, since I've come into place, we are looking at standardizing, and I think that's the real key here, because we live in in this modern modern world where everybody knows up north, knows down south, knows in the west, knows in the east what's happening. So we really want to make sure that we get that standardised, and that's one of the tasks that we've set in the mandate this year.
Okay, Tim O'Neill is the chief officer. Tim, where do you sit in the decision making process?
All the key decisions are political decisions, but we obviously provide advice and guidance and strong support to Minister and the Department in terms of the kinds of decisions that we should make for the island. I just wanted to add to what Minister said there. So the other part of that story is around the shift to Home First, which I think we talked about briefly the last time we were here. Take one example of that, the excellent progress intermediate care have made in recent months. We had a really good presentation to Manx Care Board a while ago now on that, and there's some really, really positive work being done to encourage clinicians to work more closely with residents at an earlier part in their journey and closer to home, so that they're less likely to need to come to the emergency department. And that's a really positive one. And the second one, and just very quickly, is the virtual GP. We invested in virtual GP, an additional GP capacity in this last financial year, 25-26, and we're hoping that will have an impact as we move into the new financial year. So we're definitely on to that.
Yeah, so we've actually, Andy, we've commissioned over 10,000 additional appointments, widening that virtual GP model and expanding the services like Pharmacy First. So people don't always need that GP appointment, but it is about making access easier for getting patients to the right care. And we also, Manx Care also announced, I think it was 9 mental health practitioners going into the GPs as well, which is really, really positive. Positive in terms of bringing that care closer to home.
Okay, and Tim O'Neill, putting aside labour costs and skill costs, the cost of lots of pharmaceuticals and consumables has shot up over the past 5 years. How much, roughly, have they gone up by?
So I've seen various figures quoted. The one I normally rely on from across is around 11% year on year.
Year on year.
So we're obviously very conscious of that because it outstrips budget settlements quite significantly. It's something we spend a lot of time working with Manx Care on to try and ensure we've got the leanest and most efficient way of buying drugs onto the island. And obviously that's complicated both by bad weather and also international events. So we're very, very close to Manx Care on that. And we're doing everything we can to try and bring those costs down.
Surely, I mean, 10% year on year is... You can't predict it. Surely that's unsustainable.
So there are some difficult decisions, I think, for all health and care systems to consider in the long term. The other part of that story is, with technological advances, we're getting better and better at dealing with more and more complex comorbidities. So, yeah, we need to keep that conversation going with local people about how we deliver the care to residents in a way that's both affordable but also, you know, still first class.
Okay, right, let's get back to the lines. And Paul's with us now. Hi, Paul, you're live with the Department of Health and Social Care.
Hello, good morning to you. My name's Paul from Crosby. My call this morning is largely born out of frustration, and I know it's only an hour's programme, so I've got to try and be succinct, but in brief, my journey started in August last year. And initially I had, could be 3, maybe 4 appointments at A&E, which amounted to 25 to 30 hours. I've seen 2 general practice doctors, 4 consultants, I've had 2 MRIs, and after somewhere in the order of 7 or 8 months, I bit the bullet and I paid to see a private consultant. A condition which I've had for many years, I asked during my GP appointments if it could be a resurgence of this, because the symptoms and the pain were very much related to that, or very similar to that. At the time when things were at their worst, I couldn't get out, well, I had difficulty getting out of bed, I couldn't shower, I couldn't dress myself, and the situation was somewhat worrying. Anyway, to try and cut a long story short, in March of this year, I paid to see a private consultant, which isn't an inexpensive exercise, and he, believe it or not, said, well, I believe it's a resurgence of this issue which you've had for many years, even though nobody at the hospital could diagnose it, neither of the GP said, no, it can't be this. Anyway, I was finally diagnosed with the resurgence of my previous problem, and just prior to that, this guy is a pain management guy, and I had been referred to pain management, but we weren't sure how soon I could get there. Of course, within 3 or 4 days of making the private appointment, I got a pain management appointment at the end of March. Tried to come to the end of it all. The pain management, the tablets which the consultant increased, sorted out a 6 or 7 month problem within a matter of 6 or 7 days, other than there was still a 10% issue which I still had. But he said, go to pain management for your appointment at the end of the month and they'll review it. I saw pain management and I got a letter back saying, well, we're not keeping you on, you're getting better, but I believe a rheumatology appointment would be worth it just to confirm that the diagnosis and things are working out well. Finally, this letter from the pain management came to myself, and a copy went to my doctor, and it also went to the orthopaedic surgeon who referred me. 3 weeks after that, I'm finding out, I phone my GP to say, well, the people at the hospital said you need to be referred by your GP, although I'm told that isn't totally accurate. Anyway, I contact my GP and they say, well, this letter isn't addressed to us, it's addressed to orthopaedics, so we can't refer you because the letter isn't addressed to you. So they say you need to phone pain management. I phone pain management and they're hoping to get back to me having left a message within 96 hours. Although that excludes weekend and bank holidays, of course. Where I'm coming from is there seems to be so much... I understand the need for protocols and procedures and discipline, but I am now somewhere like 8 or 9 months into a situation whereby I constantly... I've had, just in between times, I've had two MRIs, one on my brain, one on my spine. The amount of money that this must be costing the NHS, and I'm still frustrated at the end of it all because... The doctor, although they've got a copy of the letter which said it's worth getting a rheumatology opinion, say if the letter isn't addressed to them, they can't refer me. The letter needs to be written to them for referral. They said go back to paid management. The frustration going around in circles is absolutely immense.
All right.
Sorry to be so long.
No, that's fine. Claire Christians, does this sound familiar?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. Paul, firstly, thank you so much for calling up today. I understand that you seem, from everything that you've talked about here today, you seem to be sort of feel like you've been passed around the houses, so to speak. But one of the points that I would pick up on is this about your personal information and that being a frustration in the sense that you haven't been able, well, the doctors haven't been able to access that or it's being sent in a different way. And one of the things that since I've come into to be a minister, we are looking at what's called a single patient record. And you would think in this day and age that this would be something that would already be in place, Paul, but unfortunately it's not. And so even down to, the consultants or the doctors at the hospital, I know that they have to log on to some sort of 6 or 7 different systems. The systems don't talk to each other, so GPs, it doesn't talk to the doctors. Letters are being sent out by the post, things like this, all of these situations. And I know when I do speak to patients that experience our tertiary care providers, for example, they're getting letters via email. It's far more smoother, it's far more easier. And so these are things that absolutely we need to invest in to be able to make sure that something that just would seem absolutely should be the norm should absolutely come into place.
And I'm sure you've had anecdotal evidence from people who say that sometimes they don't feel like a patient, they feel like they're in the way of the process, and all they want to do is to be seen to, looked at by a professional, and a conclusion come to, but they end up in this kind of ever decreasing circle of paperwork and process.
Absolutely. And what I would say to you, Paul, is I'm very, very happy to take your details if you would like, and I can certainly have your what's happened for you since last August, to have that investigated by our clinical director, and make sure
ultimately Sorry to cut across the minister,
okay.
But an investigation. I appreciate your comments and the fact that you're prepared to pass this through the various channels. But it does appear to me that when the GP's involved, and I know they've got the protocols, but when a letter to them says, I believe it's worth getting a rheumatology opinion, to my mind, common sense must, these are highly educated, well-qualified professionals. And when it says it's worth getting a rheumatology opinion, but there's no pragmatism. Surely somebody there can say, well, this guy has been recommended to see rheumatology. I don't know how long it takes, but ultimately it's just, I'm not looking to cause a fuss. I'm not looking to complain. I'm just looking to a resolution to the end of the product.
Okay.
And
all right, Paul.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Do you mind, Paul, if we take your details and Claire Christian will be in touch with you?
Paul, I think you're absolutely right, and we're terribly English, aren't we? We're terribly Manx that we don't like to complain and we don't like to cause a fuss. But really, genuinely, I always say this: please, 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 don't think that. Please let us help and try to improve our services and improve that, because actually having these examples, and I have seen other examples where we have been able to improve things and have been able just from patient experience, and it's so important. So I really thank you, and if we can take your details, okay. I'd be absolutely happy to look into that.
All right, Paul.
Okay. Well, thank you. I will leave it at that. I mean, I'm not Manx. I've only been here 36 years, so I've got a long way to go.
All right. Thanks for calling
thanks
today,
Paul. Thanks so much, Paul.
All right.
Thank
good to
you.
Hear from you. We're live with Claire Christian, the DHSC Minister and Chief Officer, Tim O'Neill on Man in Line today.
Don't miss the Kane and Wicker furniture range in-store at Millichaps of Ramsey. Includes sofas, chairs and swivel rocker chairs, dining sets and coffee tables, with designs featuring quality frames, beautiful fabrics including Laura Ashley designs, and comfortable fully sprung seats with leather bindings. Plus, we have special offer suites and a huge range of window blinds to complement. Discover exclusive Kane and Wicker furniture in-store now at Millichaps of Ramsey.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
At Tells Skip Hire and Waste Disposal in Snugborough, you only pay for the waste you bring. For waste disposal and skips, give us a call on 677 137. That's 677 137. Visit Tells today or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Call Tells Skips today.
677 137.
Road racing returns to the island, and Manx Radio Motorsport is an essential part of it. As the official TT Broadcast Media partner, our live coverage brings every qualifying and race session to the island and the world on air and online. So with airtime, sponsorship and digital advertising options, it's officially your best chance to reach a global motorsports audience. Contact our sales team now on 682-620 or at sales@manxradio.com. Manx Radio Motorsport, the best biking station in the world.
A month ago, Paul Train told a agenda about the quite stark findings of his second Isle of Man population atlas. The statistics showing a significantly aging population were bad enough in Mr. Crane's first population atlas, but the latest version tells an increasingly concerning tale. So what's to be done? Find out on Agenda this evening at the new time, 6:30 p.m. on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gawn. Have we been too focused on policies to keep growing the economy? Should we instead be developing policy that leads to a happier, more contented society that's not forever chasing its tail? Anyone out there bold enough to have a dream?
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Claire Christian, MHK, Minister for Health and Social Care, is on, along with Chief Officer Tim O'Neill. Before we go to the phones, I've got to tell you something on a personal level. If you listen to Man in Line for any length of time, I've got some sad news for you, and that is that the Ramsey Town Commissioner and many, many time Manx Radio Man in Line caller Wilf Young died yesterday. Wilf passed away at the age of 82 yesterday after a long illness, and everybody's going to miss Wilf. Of course, he was a Ramsey Town Commissioner for 20, 25 years or so. First got elected when there was the possibility of the marina in Ramsey, and he was steadfastly against it. Nobody knew the currents and the tides, the coastline, the bay and Ramsey Harbour better than Wilf Young. And we're going to miss him on Man in Line, and I'll tell you details of the funeral when we get that. Sad to report Wilf Young died yesterday. Right, back to Man in Line. Julian's on with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Claire and Tim.
Hi there, Julian.
Hi, and a quick condolences to Will's family if they're listening. He was a great guy and I met him and he was fantastic. The news that some staff at the hospice are to be made redundant and several services are being transferred from hospice to the hospital. Has there been an additional drain on hospice funding, either through staffing, wages, or an increase in people requiring hospice services? Why can't a relatively small amount of extra government subsidy be given, even if only for the end of this administration, just to tide them over and stop the redundancies occurring? What's going to happen with appointment waiting lists if hospice patients are being brought over to the hospital? And what's going to happen to the newly upgraded state-of-the-art physio facility at the hospice? And finally, are there any future plans for the hospice buildings if they're going to accommodate some kind of new services?
Okay, Claire Christian.
So I also want to just join you there, Julian. Obviously, my condolences go to Wilf's family. I know he was an absolutely fantastic man. So I'm really sorry to hear that news. But moving so now on to obviously the hospice. So we value the hospice Isle of Man enormously, Julian. You've raised a couple of questions there in terms of the first part regarding a small amount of funding. So currently discussions are ongoing with the hospice. The focus is on developing a sustainable and long-term funding model. However, we are looking at, I have committed to looking at this commissioning model with them and looking at what we can do in this administration. Manx Care have also spoken in terms of their conversations with the hospice about looking at bridging funding as well. So we are hopefully positive, but obviously that will depend on what support we can get from the Treasury. But I am absolutely focused on assisting them. The other part, obviously, I don't really, I know that the 3 week of the voluntary redundancy sort of came to the end of the 3 weeks. I think it was on Friday. Manx Care have also indicated that should employees, there are some employees that they could actually take into Manx Care, and that's something that I think needs to be worked through with the hospice and Manx Care. But I can say that we are absolutely protecting the core services, which is really, really important. And we're having those conversations with the hospice and ensuring that. But we have had very, very good meetings so far. So hopefully we will be looking at being able to sort of come to a resolution with the hospice.
Did you see this coming?
Well, it's interesting because I think, you can go back to 2022 where the then CEO, did a Manx Radio interview and said even though the extra funding that that had been agreed over that 3 year plan wasn't enough. So, it's been obviously this, they have very similar impacts that every health services is having. But what's really important is that we do maintain the hospice core services. And because that is an absolute fundamental part of our healthcare system.
Okay, Julian.
Yeah, actually, I think you're doing a great job at Manx Care, and I know that it's a bit a difficult one. But if hospice has to, I think Andy used the phrase, live within their means and be fiscally wise, won't moving hospice patients into a system that's increasing its overspend every year make it all worse? And also the waiting list. I mean, how is, if you've got more people going into physio, lymphedema, how does this make any sense financially when hospice has got their own state-of-the-art facility that's not a drain on the hospital, and you're going to be moving them into a system where it's already seems to be spending, what was it, $50 million last year extra? And, Chris Thomas has said that the reins have got to be pulled on this. How does it make sense to move hospice? It's only going to end up costing a lot more than just giving them a million or two just to tide them over until they can work out something else, surely.
So, Julian, thank you for that. We actually, as I understand it, Manx Care do have vacancies. So that's where they've indicated, obviously, to hospice that there are vacancies that they could fill. So it's not an additional cost. But you've hit something, in terms of another the nub there in terms of the structural deficit and what some people call it as the overspend. But with this new incoming year, with the budget that we have been given, we feel that we have addressed that structural deficit, and that's really important. So that 404, Julian, will be protected at all costs. So we've implemented some really stringent financial framework around that, which hasn't been there before, and I'm looking forward to, for the first time, actually probably for the quarterly performance coming in, you know, in June, because I am positive that we are going to hit our budget for the 26-27. But you are right. I mean, there are all sorts of different things that obviously that can the geopolitical scenarios that could hit us for that budget, but we have got the mechanisms and the levers this time, and I think it's being really honest with the public about saying, okay, if for example the war impacts our costs on medicines and things like that more than we anticipated in terms of our financial settlement, then it's being honest with the public and saying, look, we were thinking of starting this a new service within our mandate, but actually we're going to slow that down for a couple of months to make sure that we maintain our 404 budget. And that's something that I'm really focused on, okay. and the team are really focused on.
All right. Okay, Julian, thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Julian.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank
nice
you.
Talking to you too.
Great talking to you
24
too.
24 minutes now before one with Claire Christian, MHK, and Tim O'Neill, the chief officer from the DHSC. Underneath all of this, Tim and Claire Christian, the Isle of Man has a growing elderly population and, at the moment, fewer working age people. So it's terrific that people are getting old and living routinely into their 80s. That's fantastic. But it means higher demand for healthcare and social care, increased long-term conditions, and pressures, obviously, on pensions and funding. And the crunch has to come somewhere, Tim.
So just quickly on that, the Home First strategy and the shift to early intervention is really the most important part of that story, I think, Andy, and we've been working really hard with Manx Care to drive that. The health and community hubs are a really good example of that, where we're investing money that would have been spent in the hospital in the acute sector in the four locality hubs, something like services such as reablement and, as Minister mentioned earlier, early mental health support, so that we've got a better chance of supporting people earlier on in their journey when they start to develop symptoms. And early feedback, certainly from the Ramsey, the Northern Hub, is really, really positive about the impact that can have across health, but also across social care, and starting to manage that demand a bit more effectively than perhaps we've previously done. And that also goes alongside the work we're doing in the emergency department to make sure that those who need the support the most are seen as quickly as possible.
Okay. And on that subject, you mentioned the North. This is for Claire Christian, and this is, in fact, we asked Theresa Cope this a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So here's the politician now. Ellie said, how safe is Ramsey Cottage Hospital?
Ramsey Cottage Hospital is not closing permanently. I really want to reassure the Ramsey constituents and other people who do use across who use Ramsey District Cottage Hospital across the island. We absolutely are committed to keeping services that are right for the community, and it's, you know what, we've experienced just moving the services into Nobles, and you can see that Manx Care absolutely value the separation of having some services up in the north of the island because of the impact that that's put on Nobles, and it's everything just geographically. You know, it's easier for patients, it's easier for people in the north, and I absolutely strongly believe that this is important, which is why we I'm not sure if the listeners are aware, but we've We've recently brought a business case, a very quick business case, to the Treasury, and they have agreed for us to put a modular minor injuries and X-ray unit up in Ramsey while that building is, because unfortunately the inspections are very serious and long-standing building safety issues.
Okay. When you say a modular, a porta cabin, is that? Or?
No. These things are a lot better than that these days. And obviously, you know, you can't have health and safety happening in a porta cabin.
Is it true that this is the matrix? This is how it lands. Manx Care operate Ramsey Cottage Hospital. They're the tenant. You're the landlord, and DOI does the remedial work. Is that right?
That's correct. So obviously the remedial and any sort of repair work is done by the DOI, and we've been working very closely with them to getting things ready. We're hoping that we're going to be making an announcement, or Manx Care are going to be making an announcement over the next couple of days to update the patients and service users. But we are looking at the MIU and the radiology being back up in Ramsey from the middle of May.
Okay, back to the line. Stephen's with us now. Hi, Stephen. You're live with the DHSC.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, DHSC, and good afternoon, listeners. If I could pose some questions, please. The first one is, we've just adopted, I believe, Jess's law rule, which gives people the opportunity to ask again for their case to be reviewed. But some of your specialities do not chime with this because of the extremely, and I mean extremely, long waiting lists. So that's the first point. The second point is, you may be aware of a positive action group meeting where Maria Brideson gave a lecture, a very good local advocate on immigration, gave a very, very good lecture. And she highlighted some of the problems that had been set up by the Isle of Man government's policy of increasing the population. And I think we've increased our population by thousands of people with dependents. And one of our catch lines to attract people was free healthcare. This has been stopped in the UK, but we have adopted that. Now, if you are a person in a fairly cost or low healthcare region, and you saw this advertisement, and you've got yourself or family dependents who need healthcare, and I'm not decrying, but we can't become the first aid situation for the world, and you make an application to come to the Isle of Man, I think I'm right in saying there's no ability for the state to check on the healthcare records of these people who we brought in. So that could be putting a strain on the island, on our own healthcare, where we've become the healthcare saviour of a lot of people who've moved to the island.
Okay.
That's the second point. And the third point for you to consider is, we still hear of an awful lot of people who go off the island and then they say, well, that was a pointless exercise. It could have been done by telemedicine. And the fourth point is, of course, that we've got a situation where Manx Care say one thing, DHS say the other, and the doctors say another. Now, I know you're having an important review of the number of beds that are available. So it's not a good situation, Claire, at the moment. So if you could answer some of these points, I'd be very grateful. I'm sure the listeners would as
well. Question.
Thank you, Stephen. You raised your second point was actually the first caller actually spoke a little bit about that. So the immigration healthcare surcharge is what's brought into the UK, and we're looking at introducing that here on the Isle of Man. That was a motion that I brought as a backbencher. It's a really important motion, because what this does is it means that people coming moving to the island from outside the common travel area will be expected to pay the immigration healthcare surcharge as they do in the UK. And, you know, for far too long, and Stephen, I completely agree with you, for far too long, taxpayers have subsidised people coming to the island. And we need to know that, and I always say this, when you're standing in in A&E, you're standing in your doctor's waiting appointment, that the people have contributed in a fair way, in the same way that the people of the Isle of Man are paying in a fair way. So that's the first one. But unfortunately, Stephen, just to add, that's not coming in this administration. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened, and it will be absolutely something that will have to happen in that next administration. But it has
How
been
much
approved.
Is that going to be?
In it works out, I think it's £1,035 per year for 5 years for the for that person, and also they have to, their dependents, depending on whether it's an adult or a child, have to also pay that, and they pay that up front as well. But yes, that's that. That in terms of that one. In terms of the off island, I completely agree with you. There are absolutely things that we have to work a lot better with our tertiary care providers, and Manx Care are working through issues with that. And you know, I get frequently some emails from patients, which basically they are raising those issues where that I could have had the appointment on the telephone, or I could, but we have improved that, but it is, there's still more work to be done, and I do agree with you. And in terms of the last point that you made with regards to the doctors and in regards to Manx Care, in regards to the DHSC, I think what's really important is we've got to improve that communication with each other, and I hope that I am leading that way with the MSC, with the BMA, and leading that with Manx Care, because this isn't good for the public to see us in having different numbers and different data and different outcomes, and that's why that rapid review is so important, to basically, you know, give us the assurance that A, what Manx Care are suggesting will ease the problem, and work with those clinical experts, and I'm talking about the people on the front line, people who are party to MSC, party to the BMA, working with them and having one singular voice, that hopefully we can drive that.
Okay.
And I think there was one more, sorry, I skipped the Jess's
long,
rule.
Longer waiting.
Yes, you're right. And also to say that Manx Care have just advised us last week that they are doing a forensic review on the waiting lists. So I'm looking forward to sort of seeing that, but that has got, these waiting lists have to come down, but it will take investment, and it will take investment of the transformation, which we got this year, the transformation funding, which will validate waiting lists.
Okay.
And all of that will hopefully drive those waiting lists down.
Okay. All right, Stephen, good to hear
Stephen,
from you.
Stephen, thank you.
All right, good to hear
Great
from you,
questions.
Stephen. And just on this, if you could just wrap this up. And again, this goes back to Paul earlier on, how sometimes the patient, the customer, the client, whatever they call these days, feels divorced from the process. It's as though the patient comes in and they get lost in a welter of paperwork or emails or this, that, and the other. And obviously, there have to be processes in health and social care, particularly with data protection and patient confidentiality. It's just that sometimes, and I think what people are struggling to figure is this because times have got tough and there's not as much money relatively as there used to be? Are there too many people for the hospital or for the GPs? What exactly is the nub of the problem, Claire Christian? If you can solve that, you'll probably be Chief Minister.
Listen, I think with the GPs, the first thing is we've got to standardise the access to the GPs, and we've definitely got to get more appointments available in the system, and that's really important. Care closer to home, different types of appointments, whether that's physiotherapy, whether that's mental health, all of these issues will really drive that down. And I totally agree, because when I first came in and Tim joined me, that was my top priority was dental waiting lists, GP waiting lists. What can we do to get this down? And because that's something that really tangibly affects a lot of people here on the Isle of Man. And that, if you're right, if you can solve that, then everybody will think that Manx Care are geniuses. But there's still a lot to do. And I'm appreciative that as I said, we've invested 700,000 this year into 10,000 new appointments. So people won't start to see that until sort of 3 or 4 months down the line. So I am hopeful that people will that investment will start to ease. And also, as I said, the 9 new mental health practitioners, obviously in the GPs, that will obviously also help.
Okay, we're back with Claire Christian, MHK, and Tim O'Neill from the DHSC in a moment.
At Bond Fabrics, we're not just a fabric shop. As well as curtains and upholstery and dress and costume fabrics, we've knitting and crocheting wools, made-to-measure curtain and blind service, plus poles and tracks. Visit Strand Street Douglas, call 611856 or see bondfabrics.im.
Oh, Jew, in 1 minute we're roasting hot in the conservatory and the next minute we're freezing cold.
Well, missus, you know how a hat keeps you cool in the summer and warm in the winter? Well, a solid conservatory roof from Spectrum Windows does the same job.
Great solution. Tell you what, Geoffrey needs a little bit of work on top. Do you think they could help him too?
Only if they've started selling wigs.
Transform your conservatory with a Guardian or Ultraframe solid roof. Visit Spectrum Windows, the showroom, Derby Road, Ramsey, or call 817777.
Dig it, lift it, dump it, load it. When you need to just get on and do it, Gun JCB it. Based in Spring Valley Trading Estate, they're the experts in JCB machinery sales, parts and servicing. JCB have been on the island since 1960, so their local experience and knowledge will help find the ideal equipment for your project. Just call 664-866 and ask for Matt for machine sales and Dave for parts and servicing. Gun JCB. Just do it.
For a wide range of wood-burning stoves and a complete installation service, visit The Snug in Ramsey. And we don't stop there. Kiln-dried firewood and full aftercare service, including chimney sweeps and maintenance. Call The Snug in Ramsey.
Spring is in the air, so it's time to treat yourself to a powerful new Honda at Riley's Garden Centre. Yes, right now, Riley's have massive savings across Honda's lawn and garden range. Save up to £300 on robotic mowers, £345 on petrol lawnmowers, and £785 on lawn tractors. T's and C's apply. Open 7 days a week on Cool Road, Braddon, or browse online at rileys.co.im. Riley's Garden Centre. Everything for the great outdoors.
Do you ever feel that the news sounds, well, a little familiar? Chances are, it's because you've heard it all before. Using windmills to produce power? We were trialling those in the early 1960s. Old news. Reform of the Legislative Council? They were talking about that in the 1950s and earlier. Old news. Problems at Peel Commissioners? The Examiner suggested there was another farce there in 1945. Old news. Listen to these stories and more in the Old News Podcast with me, H, available via your usual podcast provider or direct from the Manx Radio website. And you can also hear each new podcast broadcast live every Sunday morning just after 8:30. There's nothing new under the sun, it seems. It's all old news.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
With Claire Christian, MHK, and Tim O'Neill, the Chief Officer from the DHSC. Gary from Port St Mary's says, could you ask the Minister why applications for disability living allowance are taking many months to process?
Thank you very much, Gary. So disability living allowance falls within the remit of the Treasury Department, but I can certainly take that away. If you want to leave your details, I can certainly look into that for you. I can pick that up.
This is it, you see. This is what I said about falling between two stools. The patient is the patient. They don't know who's responsible for which. That's Treasury disability living allowance.
It is, yes.
Okay. The Palatine Centre is a nightmare for people without smartphones. You have to wait all day for a phone call, says Pat on 400.
Pat, hi, thank you. Do you know what? I tested this the other day, not from myself, but from a constituent who didn't know, as I mentioned before, about you being able to call up at any time of the day. And they did call back within the hour. So I was it was a good test to do that in front of them. I think hopefully you should see that improving. But as I said, if you do have problems, please do reach out to MCALS or myself. Okay. I'm happy to help.
MCALS is important because, again, you hit on it earlier on. People don't actually want to complain. They just want to be seen and looked after. Mm. So how do people complain without seeming stroppy? Claire Christian.
So just to be really clear, MCALS isn't a complaints service. They are a Manx Care advice and liaison service. So what they do is they can help find out about appointments, find out about results, find out about, you know, any kind of query that you have. There is the complaints department, which obviously Manx Care have an internal complaints department, and then outside of that, it's the healthcare ombudsman that would do the complaint. I think I really, really encourage people to not worry about this sort of stigma around complaints, because we can improve our services when people do come forward and they do say, actually, this wasn't really great, this wasn't a good service. But also the other part of it is sometimes it can help for those patients to understand the other side of it. And I know that in speaking to a lot of the A&E staff, you know, when complaints come into the matron there, for example, I know that they make personal telephone calls, they will call people back, you know, and absolutely explain and talk them through any issues that they might have. And sometimes it can be that personal touch that can really make that difference.
Okay, the last one is, and briefly if you would, because we've only got a couple of minutes, this is prevention rather than mm-hmm. healing. Surely if the government as a whole put more effort into promoting healthy eating and lifestyle, the pressures on the health service would lessen. Bad food leads to bad health, and educating the public on fueling their bodies with clean food should be first and foremost. Claire Christian.
Yeah, I totally agree. When I was in A&E, it sounds a strange thing to sort of mention, but when I was in A&E, it was one of the very first things that the clinical director said, you can sort out obesity. You know, it would absolutely reduce the number of people coming into our acute services. That's through, you know, heart failure, that's through heart conditions, that's
diabetes.
Through people, diabetes, people falling over, things like that. So absolutely, that's something that, you know, should, obviously we've set our mandate in terms of, in terms for this year, but should I be involved in the next, well, we're already starting this iteration, but I obviously am very keen to looking at that. And again, it's about having access to those subject matter experts, you know, and bringing that relationship closer together. That I'm really keen to get involved with. But public health obviously play a part in this, and they play a part in educating the public. So I do agree with you, Pat. Prevention is really, really important, and that education part comes from public health.
Okay, and one that was posed to Teresa Cope, is Nobles Hospital too small? Is it going to be increased? Is it going to work? Are we going to have a bigger hospital?
So I'm very pleased to say that we took through a business case for PDF funding for a larger A&E unit. I can't remember which way around. I think it's 46% too small than it should be in comparison to UK standards. So absolutely, we should be investing in this, and we should be investing, as I said, in our Ramsay Cottage Hospital as well.
Okay. Well, Claire Christian, MHK, has been with us from South Douglas. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Yes,
thank
or
you to
no,
everybody.
Are you standing in September?
I will be speaking with my constituents towards the end of this month, beginning of next. So I'm looking forward to doing that. Thank
All
you.
Right.
Thanks
Tim
for asking.
Tim O'Neill, thanks for being
Thank
with
you.
Us today. Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
We've been with the DHSC today. If you want to follow up, we've got an open line tomorrow on Man in Line. Next Monday, it's Enterprise will be with us. In the meantime, thanks for joining Manx Radio's Man in Line today. Thanks to Chris on the phones. As we remember our good friend and caller, Wilf Young, sadly no longer with us. WINT